Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the fourth day of February. Well, the cash markets are standing firm with higher prices in Chicago. How much longer can it go on? And really, what should a farmer be doing, if anything, about pricing out stocks? We'll try to answer some of these questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with veteran Chicago Board of Trade floor trader Tom Schaff. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Jackie Vakes, the cash market has been strong following futures higher for both corn and soybeans. Does it surprise you?
It doesn't really surprise me. I think what it says is that we've seen people be a little bit better prepared for this particular move. In other words, your end users, as far as the ethanol plants go and processors of beans. I think it's just indicative of the fact that we have big demand. It just doesn't seem to stop, and we're certainly not seeing rationing at this point in time.
Dan Zwicker, ADM Grain Group.
Oh, I think Jackie nailed it. It's demand-driven. This is a demand-driven rally. It's not necessarily speculative-driven. So when you have the end-user crowd fighting for a limited amount of supplies in a high-demand environment, the basis levels are going to stay with it.
And Bill Mayer.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you've got the supplies in the hands of hedgers, true hedgers, commercials that own it and are waiting for the right basis levels to move that. So you've got it probably in stronger hands than what you typically would have.
And maybe we ought to talk a little bit about rationing because there was a cattle on inventory feed, or a cattle on inventory number that was out recently, and it did show some liquidation in the cattle market, but there were some arguments made by the Purdue ag economist Chris Hurt that a good portion of that probably came not because of the particularly high price of corn, because there's high price for beef too, that it came because of weather conditions and droughts in part of the United States. Do you think he's right?
Oh, I do. I do. I think he's very right, and I work with a lot of cattle people out west. You know, the guys who are still raising cattle, you can do the crush on them, and you can pencil some pretty darn good profits. There, too, though, you know, we've been a little more aggressive in terms of taking care of all of our input costs coming in. I think another thing that's driving it, basically, is beef exports. You know, when you looked at the numbers that came out, exports in January were 37% higher this year than they were a year ago. You know, and that's South Korea and Japan buying. Makes a difference.
Bill, when you take a look at the marketplace and you think about the crop insurance side of your business, what does it tell you farmers ought to prepare themselves to do once March 1st arrives?
Well, I think, first of all, when you look at the level that you can basically get a put option through the crop insurance on at, it tells you that you better very seriously look at whether that's your best alternative to cover some downside protection, which it looks like it obviously is. And I think that, you know, the from just a general market standpoint, the trade is well aware, maybe more aware today than they were 5 or 6 years ago, that what that crop insurance number does is very important as to where the acres go. And I think, you know, that's one reason that we see tend to see here recently more of a rally in the February period than what we had, you know, in the past.
Two questions for you, Dan, and you can take them up separately. The first is, with February and high prices at this point, will producers, and have they historically, locked the bin doors and said, I'm keeping corn and soybeans as long as I can?
Well, a couple points. I think old crop inventories are the 10 crop. For the most part, farmers have parted with that a long time ago. They parted with that anywhere from $3.80 to $4.25, and maybe there was a little bit left for five on the corn. I think if they have any corn inventories around now, it's kind of considered Las Vegas corn. They're just going to roll the dice and see how high is.
So this is the reason the cash market stayed with the futures market?
True. It's been out of farmer hands for a long time. There's plenty of cash inventories moving, and you can, you know, it doesn't have to go too far to find piles of corn. But basically what that is stockpiling corn for summer consumption, because everybody's somewhat concerned that if we would get off to a shaky start on the planting season, we don't necessarily have a big increase in new crop corn acres, things could get real tight in that August-September time frame. So end users are positioning themselves in case supplies get real tight in that August-September time frame, because somebody's not going to have corn to feed or use if they don't get it covered in here and we have some kind of spring planting problem.
And Dan said that better than what – that was what I was trying to say before when I said it's in hands that will hold it tighter now than what it would be if it was in the farmer's hands, basically.
Well, you sort of alluded to rationing, but if it's in these tight hands, I'm not – who gets rationed out of this business? Everybody seems – well, go ahead, Jackie.
Well, I think it goes right to what both Dan and excuse me, and Bill have been saying, and that is who gets rationed out of it? It's the end user who doesn't get himself covered in the cash market.
Yeah, we'll find out come August, September. The ones that don't have any corn, the ones that shut down.
Well, I also think that we're starting to see, as we look around globally and see some of the food shortages and inflation, food inflation, that the people who are – lower income levels in some of the countries are going to be the first ones hurt by some of the shortages that we're going to be seeing.
Let's take up some of the numbers, and I want to come back to that point. Futures finished the week like this. We'll give you the high, the low, and the settlement from the week, overnight and day trade, and then the settlement trade is Friday to Friday, so change is a weekly change. In the wheat pit, the March contract had a high this week at $8.72¾. The low was at $8.12. Settlement price was up 28 cents from last Friday at $8.53¾. July at $9.08¼ for the soft red out of the CME group, up 33½. March corn at $6.79½ top, a bottom at $42¼. Settlement price at $6.78½. They were up 34½ cents. December contract at $6.01¾, up 25¼ on the week. March soybeans at $14.52½ top, bottom at $13.94½. The settlement price there up 35½, settled at $14.33½, and the March-November soybeans at $13.69 were up 46. February cattle were up at $108.25, 75 cents higher. March at $125, they were down $1.22½, and the lean hog settled $84.50, down $1.25. March oats, by the way, at $4.15½, up 30 cents on the week. Okay, so back to the globe, food supplies, and kind of the big picture. How do you look at what's happening in this marketplace at this time and compare it historically, for instance, to what happened in the 1970s?
Well, I think there's some similarities. I think that you've got probably a larger population growing economically better than what you had during that 1970s period. It was maybe more isolated to a couple of countries with less populations. But I think there's some real similarities there.
My guess is we are doing the 1973-74 time highs now. It started with the 08 crop. I think we're now here with 10, 11, and I think we got a ways to go yet to the upside. If we're going to duplicate that 73-74 time frame, and thing that would really trigger it at that at this point now is if we would get some disruption of oil supplies out of the Mideast, and you spike oil on up into the $200 range or higher, food prices will have to go with it because cost of production to raise food is going to escalate. So if you want adequate food supply, so I think it would be similar to the early 70s when we had Arab oil embargo, you boycott, you had the guns and butter social policies of the 70s and the end of the Vietnam War. Everything came together. So I think everything's kind of melting the same pot. And we're still got room to go higher yet.
And just to be clear, this is the 70s are not the same as the 50s and the 60s, where we needed the Green Revolution and we were short of actual product or food product. That this was driven by price, oil, and energy needs. Right?
Well, I think the part of the 70s too was that was Soviet Union driven by increasing their diets. Today is China and India wanting to increase their diets. And you look at any world balance sheet, it's very skinny, and we've got weather problems just about every little corner in the world. And the function of the market today is to expand acreage worldwide of food and increase productivity, very similar to what it did in the 70s.
Yeah, and I agree with that last statement, especially because I think when you look at the difference between now and the 70s is we don't have the availability of the land that we used to have, and that's why we have to expand production. We just don't have a choice. And when you look at an increase in population of about 30%, coming down the pike here, again, we're going to increase the population. And when Bill said better living circumstances, that's absolutely the truth. They're moving, a lot of people are moving into the middle class and moving right up with us. And when you look at oil prices, Dan brought up a good thing. I think that's why Egypt has been such a big deal. The Suez Canal, that's one thing. And that definitely could raise oil prices. And then you take and you look at China and you look at India and their increase in oil consumption because of the cars that they're driving.
I want to be careful as we walk down this sort of line where we talk about food demand and food shortages, which are two different things. And so I brought up the 50s and the 60s because the Green Revolution, really, Asia was not going to make it. They simply did not have enough product. They didn't have enough food to make it happen. It was not that they were economically coming into play, that they were wanting better foods, that they were wanting red meats. It was that they simply didn't have enough rice or wheat to make to feed their populations. Right. And then Norman Borlaug stepped in, the United States stepped in, and they were able to cultivate the Green Revolution in those areas, and production came up to meet a demand that was there because of sheer population. This time it's demand driven by economic populations that are coming up economically. So we have more middle class people here?
I'd say yes, but I still think you have to look at the division of wealth when you look at countries outside of here. And who are the people that are rioting? It's the people who are very poor, who don't have, they're not the middle class people. They're not the people who have access to the good food or anything else. And so I think that from that standpoint, unrest in those countries, it isn't that the wealthier people aren't eating okay. It's the poor people who aren't eating well.
All right. Now I hate to turn this back around, but let's talk about the opportunity that exists in this kind of marketplace, because that's what we're here for, in part, to make sure that the producer, that person that is out on the farm can stay on the farm, make good money, and manage to raise more crops. How do they view this marketplace? What's high? How do they play a market that we're in that symbolizes something that we've gone through in the 70s? Dan?
I don't think farmers – I've done a lot of meetings here over the past 3 months or so, and none of them believe that these prices will be around a year from now. And I think as long as they believe that, they will be protecting themselves. I think they run the risk when they believe these prices are here forever, like we thought they were in the 70s and early 80s.
And I think another thing that I see, also have done quite a few meetings, I think we're seeing a gearing up from a production standpoint. These guys are taking the dollars that are available out there, and they're trying to put that to good use and do the things that they can do to increase their production. And I think that's really an important factor too.
Well, I think so too. And I know just a few weeks ago when I talked with Steve Freed, you talk about efficiency in planting and harvesting both. At that point in time, there wasn't a single John Deere planter. There was one left in Iowa, and there was two left in Illinois.
One thing I think we maybe should say is we're probably talking mostly about the grain producers that we deal with. Livestock producers, I think they're in kind of a different ballgame, and they're wondering, what is in their future and how can they deal with these prices. I think they probably feel better today, at least like the hog guys, than they did maybe a week ago.
We'll return in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Tom Schaff from the CME Group. He's a veteran floor trader.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Snow, sleet, and freezing rain, and plenty of it, was the only weather story this week in Illinois. An intense and expansive winter storm took aim on Illinois and the Midwest this week, dumping up to 2 feet of snow in some locations in northern Illinois, pelting east-central Illinois with sleet, and coated central and southeastern Illinois with ice. Only the far southern tip of Illinois escaped the winter precipitation. However, everyone dealt with the Arctic cold following the storm. 12 to 20 inches of snow blanketed a large portion of central and northern Illinois in the wake of this storm. The largest snow totals were found in Lake County, where lake enhancement resulted in 23.9 inches in Highland. Chicago's O'Hare Airport measured 20.2 inches, the third highest total on record. In central Illinois, more than 19 inches fell in Fulton County. In addition to the heavy snow totals, winds gusting to more than 40 to 50 miles per hour caused whiteout conditions in many areas, and a gust to 70 miles per hour was recorded on the Chicago lakefront during the storm. South of the snow area, freezing rain caused widespread power outages and tree damage in south central and southeastern Illinois. We are not done with the winter weather just yet. Temperatures will continue below normal next week, and some snow is possible on Monday and again late Wednesday into Thursday. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the fourth day of February 2011. I'm Todd Gleason in studio with us today, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing on the phone line with us from his home in Sarasota, Florida. Veteran CME Group Chicago Board of Trade floor trader Tom Schaff. Tom, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're quite welcome.
There's two Tom Schaffs in Chicago, you and your son.
Correct.
Tell me the difference besides the age.
About 23 years. Tommy's on the floor. Tommy has an options group that he executes for a multitude of customers and does very well. And he has probably four or five people that work with him, I should say. Most everything down on the floor has gone electronic except options.
Yeah,
and so he has done quite well down there.
And you were on the floor as a floor trader and doing the liquidity thing for a long time, but you
I started in 1969, and I left the floor in August of 2007. So a lot happened. I listened to the comments, and I think we are back in the golden age. Couple comments real quick. We fed Russia in 73 because they had a disaster in 72 and they wouldn't admit it. I don't think it was a question of Russia upgrading. I think it was a question that Russia get fed or they suffer another revolution. And I think that our administration realized we couldn't afford to have that happen. Today, China is improving food quality. And I think that the evidence indicates that China cannot feed themselves. World's largest population, and they cannot feed themselves. I think the cattle rationing is probably due to the drought in the southeast and the southwest. I think the biggest unresolved issue that we have right now is the 10-11 crop size. My corn carryout is something under 500. My bean carryout is something under 50. And I arrive at that. I think corn yield is sub 150. I think the bean yield is smaller, but I think the bean demand is greater. And I learned a long time ago, you go broke if you don't pay attention to the USDA. But I think we will see the cash market reflect in extreme tightness later on into the spring. So I think that we're asking the U.S. farmer to do an absolutely Herculean job this year. Not only, you know, when you're discussing how should he market this, his job is to just plant and make sure that crop gets in the ground and grows. I think that the world is demanding, well, the world is looking at us to be the grocery store of the world. We're the marketplace of the world right now. You know, the Saudis have admitted they can't grow wheat. The Russian situation, we saw what happened there. That was a disaster. And I think China is essentially admitting they cannot feed themselves. I don't know where we're going to get the acres. We need 10 to 11 million more acres this year. We can probably find 5, maybe 6 million. But then I listened to Tom Vilsack, the Ag Secretary. He's talking about a new CRP sign-up of 4 million acres this fall for 2012. So the CRP is getting bigger, not smaller. We see no evidence. I see no evidence of rationing. We're at close to historic prices, and the demand seems to be there. The question was asked, who's going to suffer first? The importing nations have money, especially China. China is flush with money, and China will continue to buy. I think you'll probably see, you know, the cattle guy, the broiler guy, the hog guy suffer first. Don't want to see that happen, but that probably will happen. But I don't know that we're there yet. And just looking around, we set a new daily and a new weekly high in the corn market. Beans and wheat are knocking on highs. We've got corn exports right now at 60%. We've got 6-7 months to go. We've got bean exports at 90%. We've got 7 months to go. The demand is unprecedented. Prices.
Tommy?
Pardon me?
I've got a question.
Sure.
This is Bill Mayer.
Hey, Bill.
Looking at the market this year compared to like 2008, it seems to me like the market is a lot more orderly. We're moving up at, you know, stair-stepping more maybe than a spike up. Do you see that? And I guess,
yeah, absolutely.
Can we expect that to continue?
2008 was a where we had way too much rain. I drove from Chicago to St. Louis, and I thought, wow, look at that lake. That was a spec driven, that was a fund driven rally, and the end of it, you saw that end came real quickly too in late June and July, and I mean it was an unprecedented break. This is a legitimate demand rally. There's no question about it. We're seeing it in, you know, in the industrial consumption of our products. We're seeing it in the consumer consumption of our products. It just so happened that you've had some major crop disruptions globally. Russia, Australia, to a lesser extent Argentina, to a lesser extent Canada. And we've got a problem right now in the HRW with Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska. I mean, we could lose 2 million acres out there.
Tom, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What would you tell someone that you think would be the first sign of something happening in this marketplace as far as breaking the top? Where would you see that happening?
Well, traditionally as a speculator, I tend to look for a panic consumer buying to put a top in the market. Now, that's going to be more difficult today because you have major funds that trade, and it's very hard to distinguish them, especially electronically.
Can I ask you, Tom, when you say consumer buying, are you talking about commercial grain buying? What are you talking about when you say consumer buying?
Well, you know, in years past, when you would see the Japanese were historically poor traders, okay? And they would come in and they would put a top in the market. And, again, the U.S. farmer, I'm going back 10, 20, 30 years, the U.S. farmer generally put a bottom in the market, okay? When he sold his cash out, sold his product, that was the bottom. And then the farmer, the Japanese would come in, you know, 6, 8 months later, a dollar higher and buy it. I think that we have to do the number crunching and take a look at profitability in ethanol, profitability in hogs, broilers, cattle, biodiesel. We have to take a look at the profitability in all of those items, which we do, which I do, and that can give you a clue that we are getting close to a price level where we've gotten high enough, and then you have to look for some kind of a blow-off, some kind of a speculative binge.
Speaking of the specs, what do you think of CFTC's proposed rules?
You're talking about position limits?
I am.
You know, we struggled.
Let me preface this, because I made note that you said 07-08 spec-driven this time 08 around.
08 was spec-driven.
Yeah, but this time around not.
They're there. I mean, you take a look at, you know, you take a look at the stuff that comes out, the reportable, and yeah, these guys are there. They're there in a big way, but this is a legitimate demand market. And they're just along. They're just pushing along. I mean, we're not getting any breaks. We, as a speculator, I want to see a break here. As a consumer, they want to see a break. Okay, but we're not getting it. When we would normally get a 30-cent break in corn and a 60 or 70-cent break in soybeans, we're getting a nickel in corn and we're getting 10 cents in beans. And I think it's in part because of the funds. And I think it's in part because there are people that are short bought. This is going to be a tricky market. But, you know, if we have any kind of a weather problem in the northern hemisphere, then all bets are off. I mean, you could see prices. You could see price levels that you've never dreamt of before. Mm-hmm. You've got, I mean, you know, you just take a look at the problems in the Maghreb right now, in North Africa. They need to be fed. It's been evident that these people are incapable of feeding themselves. They've looked to Europe, they've looked to Russia, they've looked to Black Sea, and they can't get it there. So they're coming over here, and it doesn't look like we're in a position to produce a bumper HRW crop. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we're asking the American farmer to do a real big job here, and I don't know where they're going to get the acres. We're going to need ideal weather. I don't hear a pin drop.
No, we're just listening, Tom.
Tell the governors to open up the ditches to planting corn and soybeans that might be able to balance their budgets, huh?
Well, you know, I've taken a look at Illinois has, what, 1.6 million in CRP, and I mean it's in filters, ducks, greens. I mean, it's just there's nothing you're going to get out of it. I don't know. I think that, you know, we've pushed the envelope on bio, okay, and now we're trying to figure out how we can produce more product on less land. And I don't know how we're going to get the land. I just don't know it. So, you know, I'm bullish. I'm long, and I'm going to try to hang on.
Tom, we appreciate you taking the time today.
Okay.
Tom Schuff is from Sarasota, Florida. He is a veteran floor trader from Chicago. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Thank you for being with us this week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.